today is Wednesday, May 16th, and I'm not going to say May the 16th will be with you, because I did that yesterday, or a few minutes ago.
If you keep making those terrible jokes, the audience will find you. And how will they do that?
With this real-time location API. It's like, I love this. It's like location API. Yes, the Ars Technica writer got that right because they put location API in air quotes. And what they mean is location API is not, that is not an insidious enough term to describe what this is. It allows cops to figure out where we all are in real time. And surprise, surprise, this story is about a cop abusing his access to do that. And because there are no access controls or security or anything, it's not even really known to the extent to which this guy did this.
And the reason that anybody's questioning it, I would say, is because one cop used it against a judge and some other cops. This thing is called Securus, which is a pretty good name. You know, evil corporations are good at coming up with names. That's weird. And what they do...
looks totally not ironically named Palantir.
They buy this data. They don't themselves track you. But when you have certain things turned on your phone and you go near, you know, any kind of store or whatever, you check in. And someone knows that. Or if you switch cell towers or whatever. Well, various different people track that. And this company is basically just aggregating all of that. And they get it. They buy all the different data sources. And then... you plug in a phone number, and it's like, yeah, they were here at this time. They're probably here right now.
It is really interesting that a lot of this was described as a marketing API, and that marketers have access to this data.
Well, the reason it exists, they claim, is for jails. So if you have...
a cell phone in the jail?
You're trying to locate, so, or an escape, or something like that. But it turns out, when you're filling out the registration form, this is a pay service, that's like... check here to ensure that your Department of Corrections or law enforcement or whatever, they don't do anything to verify those accounts. They just take your money and they give you access and you can track people.
Well, I remember a time not long ago when you could just phone up Verizon specifically and just be like, hey, I'd like to buy a copy of the phone bill for this phone number. And they're like, great. You know, what time period would you like to buy a copy of the phone bill for? And it's like, how about all of 2013? And Verizon was like, sounds good. What's your credit card number and where you want it faxed to? Which included phone calls and all kinds of other metadata.
So now that this is out, people are obviously upset about it. There are some politicians who are demanding answers about this type of thing because politicians are among the subset of people who don't want you to know where they've been at all times.
How can we exclude ourselves? We're cool if the plebe citizens are part of this, but we want to be out is really what's going on there.
But it also shows that cops can and have been using this.
Or abusing it in this case.
So even if they're using it in actual investigation, it's still not cool. They shouldn't be able to track the citizens in real time. That's not... we talked about the Fourth Amendment before, and... yeah, that's a bad idea. And if you're one of those people who is paranoid about keeping your phone on at all times and carrying it with you all times, you've been vindicated.
Well, I think that this having existed for as long as it apparently has, without being on any citizens' watchdog group, or for people like us being made fun of for saying nobody actually does that, or these tools don't exist unless you have a warrant or something, it's like, no, your personal data is not valued by the people that actually have it. You value your data. But once your data is somewhere else, you have no control over it. One. Two, you have no idea if your data is being abused, which is problematic, as we see.
Well, they value it. They put an actual dollar value on it. I think, what was this, like $9 a month or something like that? It's pretty reasonable.
You get a photocopier? Remember photocopiers? Those are the thing. Your office maybe has one. Well, it turns out digital photocopiers have a sort of habit of just retaining copies of everything that they've ever copied.
Yeah,
some of them.
This was CBS News, so they went to like a copier clearinghouse, and they sent the guy in who, like the researcher that knew what he was looking for, and he shopped based on maximum number of copies. These things have like an odometer, so when you buy them, you know how much they've been used. So he bought the most used one. They found sex crime documents. They found payment IRS records with social security numbers. They found credit card payment copies of billing and stuff like that with full credit card number and all the information you would need to identity theft somebody.
Neat.
All just stored on the hard drives.
Because copiers have hard drives, because why wouldn't they?
And they also, they talked to this company and they were like, do you do business overseas? And the guy was like, we just shipped a whole bunch to China. Yeah.
That explains why China is interested in really, really used copiers by the State Department. Who knew?
Yeah, I got to, I mean, there's a lot of my records and copiers, I'm sure, you know, over the years.
Now we're going to have to go to surplus auctions and buy copiers to prevent them from falling into the wrong hands.
Well, that guy's got a business where he'll come in and wipe your copy. He's got actually a software that you load onto the copier. But it didn't sound like he was getting a lot of business.
But he does now.
Yeah.
The black dot bug hits the iPhone, and how to fix it if your an emoji breaks your iMessages. So, like, why is Apple has got so much money? Why is this a thing?
This harkens back to there was the Indian font that broke the iPhone, and this is the same way. It's a series of emojis and text that's black dots, and it will crash your phone anytime your phone sees this message. So the only way around it is to, without having that message appear on the screen, you get Siri to send messages or whatever, and scroll it up to the point where it's not on the screen anymore, and then you're okay. Till someone else sends it to you.
Bunch of high school kids are going to have a lot of fun with this one, harassing each other. Or maybe the teachers that they don't like.
I think Apple is...
That's not instructions.
They're going to fix it eventually, but... Yeah, kind of sad that you have a product that's supposed to just work, and it keeps, it's a situation where a text message, which you can't say no to, can hang your phone indefinitely.
Apple, come on. In other news, Apple doing something probably good for the consumer for a change. iOS 11.4 is going to disable the Lightning connector after 7 days, which limits law enforcement access. So apparently one of the ways that law enforcement breaks into your encrypted phone after they have it in their possession is to plug in a Lightning connector and simulate key presses on the screen with the Lightning connector so they can do it faster than you normally can.
No, it's that that gray key thing.
Oh, so they can, you know...
The gray key is USB.
But they have to have a working USB Lightning connector in order to do that. And yeah, so
7 days. After 7 days of not unlocking your phone, it's never going to unlock again through the USB.
I think that Apple will probably plug the whatever hole this thing uses once they actually figure out what it is. They'll probably plug that hole. Imagine Apple has probably already ordered one of those through a shell company and is investigating it. Although it's really weird. Like, you know, Tim Cook does stuff like this, and it's like, maybe he's actually an okay guy. And then, like, in the last episode of the news where Apple is confiscating that nice old lady's iPhone repair parts, and it's like, what are you doing, Tim Cook? What are you doing?
Well, I think it's a lot of this is just public perception, because I think the whole FBI episode was public perception. I don't think they care.
I think that you have to be right, because the only thing that would explain both bits of behavior and motivation from Apple would be to maximize how much Apple is sold in the world market. And an Apple phone sold in China that is reasonably secure from U.S. tampering would be key for selling in that market. Much like we're not buying Huawei and ZTE phones. I mean, am I right? Am I right?
Also, when the FBI needs to get into an iPhone, they come to Apple.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Apple's powerful. They're negotiating. They get paid for that kind of thing. Remember when I think it was AT&T was just making an insane amount of money every year. Doing those phone taps and allowing the giving them data records and stuff like that, because they would charge them like $30 a copy every time they needed to spy on somebody. They're making millions. I think it's similar to that, because once Gray Key gets involved, then nobody's calling Apple.
Yeah.
So shut that down, get around it. We might help you out. You know, we don't really care about the plebs, but they need to believe that we do.
Well, I don't. So hackers have shut down Copenhagen's public city bike system, and I'm not sure that so usually, like, hackers, you fight for the rights of the people. You don't do this. This is just annoying.
Yeah, these bikes use Android tablets to manage the rental, and if the Android tablet isn't working, then the bike won't unlock from the bike rack because it's all automated. So people woke up one day and all the bikes were just stuck in their racks.
Now, was this a hacker or was this really Bobby Tables? Like little Bobby drop tables.
Johnson, well, they do mention that they didn't, they looked at the logs and they didn't try to clear their trail. They didn't try to exfiltrate anything. They just simply just destroyed the entire database. So, you know, related to this, you know, those green bikes, we got them in this town. A lot of towns have those green bikes. I can't remember what they're called, but it's like a bike rental program. It's near colleges and stuff. And they took that to Baltimore, and the Instagrams of that are hilarious. Like the first day they took it to Baltimore, there's a picture of one hanging from a telephone line.
How did
you do that?
I'm not even mad. That's honestly very impressive. We'll have to remember to insert a picture of that in editing. We've already forgotten. So everybody's got the personal assistants, right? You know, Siri, Alexa, Google. We could say, okay, Google and trigger one right now.
You know, I didn't include the story, but I saw there's like a really famous home builder building them into every new home, whether you ask for it or not.
Of course.
So it's not even like sitting out on a desk somewhere. It's just the speaker is just built into the home.
Well, it turns out that Siri, Alexa, and Google can be controlled by inaudible commands. So, yeah, the microphones in these, because they pick up more and different frequencies than the human ear, things like TV shows and music that you might be listening to can talk to the assistant without you overhearing it. And you can also mute the assistant's responses so that you don't even know the devices are having any kind of a conversation.
And it can be covered up with another source. So someone drives by your house and they're rocking some really loud music from their car. You hear the music, but Alexa is hearing commands.
So when you get that 5-pound box of Haribo gummy bears, you'll know who to blame.
Yeah. You definitely, because you can change what Alexa responds to.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to get one of these devices, well, first of all, don't get one of these devices. It's crazy. But if you have to have one, immediately change what Alexa responds to.
Now, I'm not really, like, according to the article author, this type of attack is on the radar of the companies involved because they contacted them, but they were pretty tight-lipped about their responses. Like, we have mitigations in place for that. But the researcher was still able to trigger these kind of things, so I don't think that their mitigations are really super effective.
And also, they mentioned how, under current laws, it's not necessarily, by the letter of the law, illegal to do this. Even if they were doing this in a commercial or something, not technically illegal.
Yeah, there have been a lot of TV commercials, us included, that have, air quote, maliciously triggered digital assistants.
But it was obvious.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, you knew what was happening. It didn't try to mute the responses or anything like that.
Yes, but another commercial could just be playing music and then it's making your Alexa do things.
I think maybe the security teams that are working on that are probably busy with other things like malicious Play Store apps, because they're really not doing a good job there either. I mean, malicious apps get back on the Play Store just by changing their name.
I think it was in April, like early April, we reported the insane number of malicious Play Store apps. It's like they went through and they made a big press release. Yeah, we got them. They're gone.
I didn't include the story, but related to this, two malicious apps showed up in the Ubuntu Snap Store as well, which is kind of like I don't know if that's really the first time, but somebody had inserted cryptocurrency miners in some games that were posted to the App Store. So these marketplaces are less and less trusted because of the bizarre-like nature of, you know, anybody can upload anything.
And it turns out, even after you've been caught, just simply change the name of your app and resubmit the exact same thing, and here it is again. They don't keep you from doing that.
Yeah, they've got a little table here of the application SHA-2s and the package names, so some interesting stuff going on there.
Call Recorder Alpha. That sounds a little suspicious.
Is that a thing that we allow on the store? I'm confused. I'm not sure. Well, I think I missed this one. Tsunami warning accidentally broadcast in Alaska. So I'm guessing Alaska thought they were going to have a tsunami.
Yeah, this is very similar to, there was an East Coast tsunami warning. Then there was the big nuke warning in Hawaii that we all remember. And now Alaska has broadcast a real tsunami warning. Not a test. This is not a test.
Or even an accidental test.
A tsunami.
Post-it note on a monitor test.
But, spoiler alert, no tsunami arrived. It was fake. Alaska is blaming the National Weather Service. I think the National Weather Service is blaming Alaska. So it just shows that our early warning system It's got some problems.
For both North Korean missiles and tsunamis now.
The Hawaiian one, it was down to the UI, which is sad.
I wonder if they had a warning like that about the volcano eruption, because it would suck to be driving down the road and have your car engulfed by lava in Hawaii, because that's happening right now.
If you think the nuke warning is infrequent, like, how often do you have to warn about a volcano eruption?
Well, I really didn't want to have to do more stories on this. Spectre and Meltdown, the CPU bugs that just won't die, they're back in the news again. We're on like round 8 of fixes from Intel. And it turns out that this time, the documentation was misread by most operating system developers. And one of the ways of mitigating this was misimplemented in the operating systems. And so they've actually made it worse in some cases.
Yeah, this is the popss command, or popss. It's all about an interrupt and when the thing has access to the stack. And so it was really just misinterpretation, or probably bad documentation. Good Lord, bad documentation is the bane of a programmer's existence. Turns out it's OS programmers as well. So I don't know if this is really an oversight. It's just a misinterpretation. And it gives an attacker the ability to probably panic the kernel, but in a worst case scenario, if they were really good, extract information from the stack and get the memory results.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it has to do with setting debug breakpoints. So like as a software developer, you can set breakpoints in your software, and you can set a breakpoint right before control of the system is handed off to the system from your program. And so because the breakpoint is there, you can sort of use the breakpoint to co-opt the system instead of controlling and having breakpoints in your user program. So that's pretty malicious. But Spectre and Meltdown, there were other announcements this week that the fixes from Intel are incomplete, and there are more advisories on that. And so there's going to be more microcode and operating system updates around Spectre and Meltdown. I mean, it's just the hardware bugs that just keep on giving. I am very skeptical that Intel is going to have this thing nailed down in hardware by 2019. That just doesn't seem likely.
But the thing about this one is, the thing that points, I guess, mostly to misinterpretation rather than, is that everybody got it wrong.
Yeah.
This is ARM, this is x86, and FreeBSD. This is AMD. Everybody got this wrong.
Yeah.
So it really does seem like the documentation was just crap.
Look at that. So let's talk about science, because robot, that's not even a robot, it's just jumping spiders. We want to build robot spiders.
This is AI, not science.
Science. Well, it's in news science.
Well, these are pest-fighting robots. This is robots AI.
Well, in order for us to build the pest-fighting robots, we want to understand how jumping spiders jump, because they jump really, really efficiently. And we know spiders have like hydraulic components in their legs, but are they using the hydraulic components to jump, or do they just use the hydraulic components to move? And so it turns out they literally trained a spider like you would train a dog to jump from platform to platform so that they could record it at an insanely high frame rate to understand what exactly the spider was doing to efficiently move from place to place, so they can build a robot that will do the same, which is kind of terrifying.
I love the idea of pest fighting robots, and I hope that we can one day control them remotely, because what a great video game. You know, you get like a little robot spider and you send it in under the refrigerator to fight whatever's that. Oh man, I can't wait for that future. I hope I live to see it. The other hilarious thing about this story, that little spider, Kim, they reported toward the end of the story, Kim is no longer with us. Now, I wonder, what do you think the life cycle of a spider is?
Yeah, was that natural causes?
I think somebody might have just walked in the lab one day and was like, oh, you know, and smashed Kim.
Aw, she's so cute.
So rest in peace, Kim. You've taught us so much.
You know, I'm thinking about the video game idea. That's brilliant. I mean,
yeah,
just like right. You're a little robot with a flamethrower going around the inside of an anthill. I mean, that would just be endless amounts of fun.
Well, I don't know about a flamethrower, but this would be in the home, I think. But also, think about, there's a blockchain component to this, because I'm paying you small amounts for every ant that you kill in my home. This is a $1 billion idea.
You'll be like the exterminators that deliberately infect houses with termites and other pests and then come back a year or two
later.
So
there's like a risk-reward type of thing, too. Because, you know, like games like PUBG and DayZ are so fun because you invest not so much in PUBG, but like in DayZ, you invest something in your character, you invest all that time, and then if someone kills you, there's a real loss. And that's a huge part of how much fun it is. There's that fear. So think about, you're paying, let's say you pay $50 for a robot spider, right? You pay for the robot and you would deploy it in my house. So I get a package in the mail and I put the robot out, and then you have to fight my ants and spiders. And if you lose, that's $50. So you got to earn back your $50. Then you're making profit on your robot spider. It would be the most amazing thing ever.
We need a Patreon stretch goal. It's going to be probably about... any venture capitalists in the audience want to contribute a couple of million dollars to that idea? No. I don't think we're quite there with the miniaturization yet, but soon.
Yeah.
I could definitely go for the outdoor, because I've got some pretty gnarly outdoor anthills that are far away from the house that are getting kind of close to the house. And it's like, I could go for that robot flamethrower that's just a direct infiltration.
I think the fuel supply will be a problem, but hey, you know, it's something we could work on with that Patreon stretch goal.
Oh, you, these are your grocers. Like, so you order groceries online, and these robots, they're traveling on a grid of bins. And I guess they just like park over a bin and reach down and grab stuff.
Well, they pick the bin up and take it to a picker. It's good. As usual, the one thing the robots cannot do is if there's they used a carton of milk as the example. A robot would just reach in and crush it.
I thought this was the one that had it had the example of like grabbing an apple.
That's a different robot.
Oh, okay.
So what these guys do, there's four, like they could have 21 rows of things under them plus the two-dimensional grid, and the software does the timing. So these are four-dimensional robots. So like, let's say you have a pair of shoes that's four down. So the robots will swarm and pick up the top three, and then the final robot will get the fourth one, scurry over to the picker, who will then take the item and put it in a box, and then the robots put the thing back together and then go on to the next one.
Oh, that's nice. From the video, I did not pick up on the multiple layer thing, but this description of that makes a lot more sense now, because you can see the stacks of the products as stuff is moving around, so they know what stuff is needed.
The software can go, I think, 21 deep? Yeah, 21 layers of items. So you just add more and more robots, and they just swarm to a location, find the thing they want, and then that one hurries off to the human, and then they put it back.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah, incredible. I think the software is the big thing there, because they're down, they report back. This work area is too big and too fast to deploy Wi-Fi to all those, so they use 4G, and they report home 12 times per second, I think. So the software is like, it's like it's orchestrating music. You know, it's a 12th of a second to where those robots are at any given time.
Oh, what a time to be. Maybe we can get a tour of that. Maybe level one is getting enough clout. We can be like, let's do a level one video on that.
But think about the human component of that. Because, you know, we talk about the Amazon workers, and they're running back and forth a lot. But this guy is just standing in one place, waiting for the robots to come, and then grabbing a box and putting it. Like, that's his whole day.
I think that would be a really fun existential movie where, like, the robots are looking at you and reacting. It's like, if you slow down because you're depressed or whatever, the robots just kind of swarm you and surround you. And
they're backing up. You're the slowdown. It's like, hey, you know, we need to get, I've got a box to drop off. What are you doing? And you're trying to,
Well, and we're a little bit late to the party with the news of this, but the Google Duplex, like the Google I/O was last week, and Google showed off a lot of really, I don't want to use the word interesting or dystopian or disturbing. Google showed off a lot of stuff. It's all of those things. One of the things that is making the rounds is the Google Assistant calling a human being and having a conversation with a human being, unbeknownst to the human being, to schedule a hair appointment. And what was the other thing? There was something else they did. They did a hair appointment.
They asked for hours at restaurants. They did a lot of amazing things.
They ordered a Chinese takeout, I think, was the other one that I was thinking of.
And it's the hair appointment one is amazing, because it's like, no, I don't have an opening for that time. And then the robot's negotiating. It's like, well, let's try another time, you know? And it's really, you cannot... I don't think any human could tell they were talking to a robot based on these examples.
No, and the Google AI blog here has got an article about that and the audio, and you really should pull this up. If you don't do any, if you never click the links from our stuff, you should click the link from this one and listen to that conversation if you haven't already heard it, because it is, it's the future, and also I weep for humanity.
Now we just, the story we included here was Google's blog, so this is all just cheerleading, but there was a slew of stories of people terrified of this thing. And I think the lawmakers are already calling out. It's like, no, you're going to have to tell us if you're a robot. It's going to have to be like, you know, when you get a call from prison, well, it's like, this is a call from such and such correctional facility. I think they want a disclaimer. It's like, hey, I'm a robot. Let's set up an appointment.
It is really, I don't know if this was a Google blog post, because I read a lot about this. I don't know if it was a Google blog post that talked about this or some other article, but this is kind of a consequence of having all of these businesses not have any kind of standardized or unified API, a programmer's interface for doing all of these things. There are interfaces for making restaurant reservations online and for ordering takeout from a restaurant that doesn't do takeout, like Uber Eats and stuff like that. But there's not really a unified system for that, except for the telephone. Like, pick up the phone, call it, and, you know, make it so. And a lot of those online services charge quite a bit to the restaurant for the use of their services, and those are things that really should not cost anything.
Now, the one thing I want to hear the duplex do is I want them to have these same conversations, but with someone with a heavy, heavy Indian accent. And I want to see how well it does in that situation.
I don't know.
Because you know that duplex is going to be doing tech support in no time. That first level of reboot your router, or we're just going to schedule an appointment, that's not going to be a human much longer.
This Uber crash is reportedly caused by software that ignored objects in the road. So, yeah, if you read between the lines on the article, it says that the Uber car detected that there was a person in the road, but decided that it wasn't really a threat to the vehicle, so the vehicle just continued.
I think the vehicle did win that battle. They talked about it was calibrated too far in one direction. I wonder if they're I don't know if the direction means an actual cardinal direction, or if it's like there was a slider. It's like, worry about objects this much, you know, and it was all the way to zero.
I think that they were describing in the context of, like, let's say that you have a plastic bag caught by the wind that's in the road, so the car should just plow through that, no problem. And so I think that slider was dialed a little bit too much on the, it's probably a plastic bag side versus a cyclist in the road.
And it was, I mean, she was walking the bike too, so it had a full view of a metal object and a squishy meat object standing behind it. I don't think that's good news. There's going to be some legislation based on that, because
the people that worked on this, they obviously missed the really bad made for TV movie Knight Rider 2000, because when they were working on the new version of Kit, they had the new AI, and a deer darted out in front of the road, and the car was like, it was a deer. It wasn't going to do anything to the car. And it's like, that's not the point, AI. They could have learned an important lesson from that otherwise just tragedy of a movie.
I think this was a homeless woman. You think in that split second, it was like, oh, that's a non-citizen.
In China, it's going to check your social citizen score. If it's negative, do you get the negative value added to your own social score to make you have a higher status? That would be a dystopian.
But whose social score does it go into, the car's social score or the person inside of it?
A little of both. Artificial intelligence is going to reshape jobs in banking. So this story, you read this and it's like, don't worry, executives, you're fine. But everybody else, they're going.
The big example here, they were talking about bank mergers. And bank mergers happen all the time. And a lot of times they use slightly different systems. There's no standardization. So there's human beings that are just sitting and doing data entry. They're looking at one screen and they're doing data entry on another screen. And it's cheaper to do that, believe it or not, than to write some sort of system to do the migration, you know, programmatically. But if you just use an AI that can read one screen and type on the other screen, turns out that's cheaper than the human being.
Damn it. Sorry if you work in... That's probably better, though. Maybe you guys could go to work on the AI for something else.
I don't know if the temp agency people are going to be qualified for the AI work. They also talk about... They put scores on bank jobs that are likely to be automated. Teller was at 70%. Think in the next, was it 5 years or something like that?
Yeah. There's a table for that. Yeah, here we go. So tellers, loan officers, customer service reps, and even loan... this is a surprisingly high number of loan interviews, because you got to figure there's not a lot of loan interviews and clerks.
Well, but remember, there's that insurance company that sells you insurance purely based on what the AI thinks your risk is. So I'm sure it's that same kind of software.
And also financial managers. I'm surprised financial managers is not higher, in all honesty, because it seems like the impetus on banks is to have non-fiduciary advice on what you should do with your money. Because a fiduciary, their first responsibility is to you. But if your financial planner or your financial manager is not a fiduciary, their first duty is to themselves. And it's not really as cut and dry as that, but I'm honestly surprised that banks have that many financial managers that would do that in the first place. Because it seems like the AI of the future is going to be the one that works for you. Like, that'll be the one that sells, hopefully. The one that has a fiduciary. It's like, this algorithm is fiduciary certified. That'd be neat.
But this AI doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the bank. So it makes sense that they're...
As long as it... Like, I want that certification on an AI, I guess would be another way to put that.
Yeah, they won't buy it. There have been a lot of cases where Goldman Sachs got caught selling to the customer the opposite of what their trading desk was buying. So they were literally like, we need trades on the other end. And you're like, go to the people, tell them to buy the opposite of what we're buying because we need to sell.
None of those people at Goldman Sachs were fiduciaries. Now you know why.
And their AI won't be on it.
Another thing announced in Google I.O. was the 8 times faster Tensor Processing Units 3.0 for AI and machine learning. Now, I don't know if it was mentioned in this article. You remember AlphaGo? AlphaGo originally was 48 Tensor Processing Units. They can do it with 4 of these.
Yeah, they did mention that. And they talk about how, or maybe it wasn't this article, but they talked about, it was the navigation one. They are, at this point, they're like, yes, we've conquered Go. We must move on. So they're doing the navigational thing now.
Yeah, the AI that's trained to navigate develops a brain-like location tracking. And so the rendering of the neural net that's produced from this training looks a lot like brain scans of 30-year New York cabbies.
And it was not specifically told to figure it out that way. It was just like, figure out how to navigate. That kind of, like the learning thing. And so the way your brain works is you have... like location cells, and then you have grid cells, and it's actually like a hex RPG. Your brain actually thinks like that. It actually creates sort of a hex model, and this AI, without explicitly being told to do that, that's how it organized its navigational system.
Neat. So what you're telling us is that we're getting ready to meet or surpass the biological evolutionary mechanism for formation of neural nets.
Well, that's what
particular problem domain.
That's what they're assuming here, is that billions of years of evolution came up with that system, and that's because maybe it's the best system. Meanwhile, the AI did it in a couple of years. I wonder if something with some sort of, like, geese probably have better navigation than we do, right?
Because
they migrate and stuff. I wonder if they do it the exact same way.
That'll be interesting.
Got any goose experts in the audience?
We need to grow goose brains in the lab, which is going to be a great segue for, I'm not sure if it's our next story, but one of our stories.
That's in the nonsense section, actually.
Oh, that's at the end of the Friday. Week. Yeah, so, damn it. Well, you'll just have to wait. So, okay, that gives me the opportunity to talk about sort of some downsides. They mentioned that these new tensor processing units require water cooling, so I don't think they've been able to maintain the same power efficiency that they have previously. And so, during the keynote, people cheered. Google was like, oh, these are so powerful, we're going to water cool them. Everybody was like, yeah, woo! And it's like, wait, that's not actually a good thing.
Well, they did talk about also that they really packed them in, though. Like, they have them in these cells where they're all densely packed. So I wonder if that might have something to do with the water cooling.
Yeah.
Just more efficient.
It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of NVIDIA, because NVIDIA's, like, their new Tesla product that does AI and machine learning, that's basically a first generation product, and it's going to be interesting to see how fast it processes TensorFlow versus this, because right now my money's on NVIDIA's product versus Google's homegrown product, which is, that's a whole other dimension of crazy. But if NVIDIA's first gen product is going to be that much better, then NVIDIA is just like, we think they're printing money now. You just wait and see. It's going to be crazy.
We should also mention, you can't go out and buy these. You maybe if you got a cool enough software, they'll loan you one, but these are not for consumer use.
No, because you don't need it, because Google is using all of these as fast as they can make them to make their products better. So Speaking of which, Boston Dynamics, the Atlas robots can now chase you through the woods. Was this the same article that has the one that you can buy? Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay. The mini.
So this is cool. This is disturbing. It's a robot that runs, and if you watch it jogging, it basically looks like a robot jogging. It jumps over a log, and that's all really cool, and blah, blah, blah. We can talk about all that. But this is the story here. You can buy one of these next year. It's like a robot dog.
And they both kind of do the same thing. It's all about they learn their environment. And this, you mentioned earlier, if you don't click on any of the links, you should, what did you tell them to look at?
The listen to the menu ordering thing.
Yeah. Well, this is just as impressive. This little yellow dog. And it does, it's a robot, but as you're watching it do all these things, you do assign animal qualities to it. And you're like, oh, look at this little guy. And it does, it walks forwards and backwards and watches, they overlay on the screen what the dog is seeing, like the LiDAR, you know, and like the how the world comes into existence around it, how it navigates. It's just incredible.
There was a thing, I hope the video on PenguinCon is out this week, because there was a thing at PenguinCon that was very similar to this. There was a researcher that made really cute and cuddly looking robots that had really, really disturbing behaviors to kind of study how people would react to them at events like PenguinCon. So that's sort of fun. And so she had like this cute starfish thing that would kind of purr and, you know, do cat-like things until it was comfortable with you. And then it would start suckling on you in a very sort of uncomfortable way. And watching this reminded me of that, because it's like, oh, this is really cute and cuddly. And they're like, I think when it was going up and down the stairs, it was just like its motion up and down the stairs was sort of that same uncanny valley of when I imagine that like the starfish cat thing would start suckling on you. And it's like, oh, that's not good.
Well, I think the stair part is it goes. So if you switch back, there's that white thing that I guess that's the head. That's the front. It goes up the stairs, and then it turns around, and it goes down the stairs backwards. And it's sort of, you get that sort of exorcist feeling about it, where it's like, that was a dog, but now it's doing something that a dog can't do.
It also kind of reminded me of Aibo. Sony made the Aibo, which is only available in Japan, but the Aibo has a cult following, and it was a very sophisticated robot for the time. I think it was popular in like the 90s, and it was a pet robot dog, but they were fantastically expensive.
You know, we did a story last week about you can't get parts for them anymore, so the monks are doing services for them now, because you can't repair them anymore. Wow. So they're considering them dead, and you can send them in, and they'll do a service, and then they'll strip the parts out so that other Aibos may go
live. May live. Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, the independent.co.uk has got Victory Day 2018. Russia has been showing off the Uran 9 robot tank in Red Square. So this is a robotic tank with surface-to-air missiles and a machine gun, a Gatling gun, I think, and all kinds of other interesting weaponry. It's remote piloted up to 2 miles away.
But it's only remote piloted because of that rule. You know, the AI is not allowed to decide whether to shoot. So this thing actually does its own targeting and everything. And it's only up to the remote pilot to say yes or no.
Interesting. Does it stand a chance against Sandia National Labs 300-pound copper shaped charge ATV? Which costs way less than the tank, I'm sure.
They also had an automated minesweeper, which is not a weapon system, so that is fully automated. And they've already used that in Syria. So it just goes out, it detects the mines, I think it shoots them.
Oh yeah, they casually dropped it was used in Syria already, and it was like... Rrr.
Oh yeah, the Uran 9 has been in the field. It's been used. So, and then the guy driving or deciding when to shoot, he's in an armored vehicle a mile back. So it really is a robot tank, which is terrifying and amazing.
How many robot tanks like that you think you could pilot? If they're just, you know, running around waiting for approval to shoot, I would think one guy could manage at least 6 or 7 of those.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, you probably would want a couple of guys running. How many tanks are in a tank squad?
Well, do you think you make the tank more disposable and lightweight, and you don't worry about armoring and stuff like that because you don't have to protect its squishy, meaty insides?
No, I think the optics and everything will be insanely expensive.
Well, what if you do it with a drone? What if you got a drone in the sky that's impossible to hit, and that's the optics for the tank doing all the other stuff?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because the other thing they were showing off was the drone.
I like the non-helicopter drone that they have, because they were like, helicopter design doesn't work. So they did their own thing that can hover, but it's not really a helicopter type design. So that looked neat. But yeah.
Impressive Russian weapon systems. When you look at that and you're like, wow, they got all this cool stuff, you have to remember that they spend a fraction of what we do.
And they really do.
We just keep our stuff secret, even from the Americans. So,
so what about font code? We don't really talk much about steganography, but this is a kind of steganography. They're embedding information in text documents by using glyph, like by perturbing the glyphs. So what they're saying is you start with a font and you just move little aspects of the font, and that is how you embed information in the document surreptitiously.
Well, we should mention we've moved to the design section, which Krista submitted most of the stories for. I submitted this one, but she sent us a bunch of design stories, and she's not here to tell you about them. You should angrily tweet her about that.
Damn her and her normie activities.
But yeah, this is basically hiding things in plain sight. So the human eye cannot tell the difference. Maybe if you got really good at looking for it. But what you're seeing on the screen, all these are slightly different. All those B's and all those A's, can you see a difference? I certainly can't.
There's information embedded in that document.
Yeah, the extremities, the little accent marks on these fonts are hiding a hidden coded message.
God, this would be an amazing way to store your Bitcoin private wallet key. It's like you write some really, really awful fiction and be like, this is my novel that I'm going to publish someday. And it's your Bitcoin private wallet key just hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, and you can do it from printed page or just taking a picture of the screen or whatever, but they have this software that you can get and you can hide things in plain sight. Pretty cool.
Do you work in the ad industry? Do you depend on people clicking on the ads that you design in order to get paid? Well, I've got some good news for you and some bad news for you. This AI knows when your graphic design is good or bad. So yeah, you were telling me a little bit about this before we started.
Yeah, they took 500 people and they sat them down. That was sort of the focus group. And they asked them what they liked about these ads. But more importantly, they tracked their eyes. And yeah, you can show this picture here. The top number is the focus group. The bottom number is the AI. And look how accurate it was. And I guess the rules are pretty simple. You want a lot of color. You want to use blue in the background. But yeah, this AI, incredibly, incredibly good at figuring out what will draw the human eye. I don't necessarily know that consumers like what it figures out, but it knows it'll look at them, or the people will look at them.
Yeah. So what we need to do is that, like, I want to bring about this system immediately. It's like, all right, you designers, you do your design. It's cool. Let's feed it to the AI. And if the AI says it's crap, it goes back.
That was the thing. What the designers thought would be really eye-catching weren't always the case. Because some of those really boring ones, the white background ones, the designer's like, oh yeah, this is really good. I was like, nope. And sure enough, the people didn't look at it.
It's interesting. I wonder if that'll make the websites that have the buttons and stuff that look like it's part of the article. Like, I've even been trapped by that on news articles where, like, I'm reading along and it's like the font changes slightly, but I don't think anything of it. And it's like, oh, I started reading an ad in the middle of this story. Whoops. That's what the white one reminds me of.
Or those download buttons. Where the download button is an ad and the real download button is a 9-point font that's under it.
It's just a text link and it's like, oh, that's boldly played. That's nice.
We need to immediately put these to use in our YouTube thumbnails.
Yeah, that would be good. Oh, yeah, we should send all of our YouTube thumbnails. We should stop making the YouTube thumbnails relevant and coming up with clever headlines.
Yeah, a lot of work goes into that.
Just do clickbait and nonsense.
We should just steal that, like, black background with a blue splash and a picture of a car, and that should be all of our thumbnails.
That literally should be the thumbnail for this episode. So we figured that out. That's already figured out. We know what we need to do. So maybe the headline for this episode of the news could also be the 2017 Jeep Grand Cherokee. Any of you guys that were playing that on speaker, your personal assistant just heard that, and now you're going to start seeing Jeep ads.
Alexa, buy a 2017 Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Also from Google I.O. was Google's plan to make tech less addictive. So the talk on this, if you have the opportunity to watch the video from Google I.O., the guy on stage was like, you know, we're starting to notice we're doing our own analytics, and it's getting kind of disturbing how much time people are spending with their phones. Maybe we should do something about that.
Yeah, they're doing a couple of things, and one of the big, so the Motorola phones, I have a Motorola phone. If you put it face down, if you have the setting on, it just doesn't do anything. It just shuts up. So Android P is going to get every phone is going to have that.
Yeah.
So you put it face down.
Yeah.
And a couple of different things. What were the other ones? You have to scroll down. I don't remember them. Oh, yeah. When you're, it's going to give you a timer. So you can set yourself like a little sleep timer, like your television. So like, hey, I would like to go to sleep soon. Give me like 15 minutes to get my fix. And it's actually going to turn the color off on your phone to make it less appealing to browse without actually just turning off.
Wow. That might work. Maybe. I don't know. I'll give you guys a pro tip right now that helped me like a year or two ago. Turn off notifications on your phone. Like the little light blinking maybe is okay, but just turn off the thing making noise. Because if the thing is turned on making noise, you're going to get an email every 30 seconds from people that should not email you every 30 seconds or whatever your notice is. Just check your phone. Like if you check your phone 4 times an hour, that's once every 15 minutes, which is probably still too often. And that is often enough. You don't need to check it any more than that, I promise you.
Or you're getting those error logs via email. You know? Most people probably don't have that problem, though. I think you get way more emails than most people. Now, the last one, though, I think would be terrifying for you is the dashboard. So, like, at the end of the day, it's going to give you graphs of how many times you picked up that phone.
That's definitely going to make me feel like not a good human being.
I think we need a screenshot of your dashboard, like, 6 weeks into this.
We might be able to arrange that. It's like, you know, how this helped me do stuff and that kind of stuff. But to be fair, a lot of the emails that I get are just, they're not, like, they didn't have to be, like, a lot of people, like, reach out and they're like, hold my hand while I do this. And it's like, it's cool, I'll hold your hand, but you really don't need me for that. You can just, you're a big boy, I promise, you can do this. It's fine.
But the emails, when you think about, like, the emails are annoying, but when you think about the people who won't email and call, you pray for the emails.
And in our last story from Brand New, I'm not equipped to deal with this. I don't have this part of my brain.
This was purely Krista's story. I can't tell. I don't know how I feel about this. I guess it's better. They talked about the font being better.
Do you know what I'd rather have than an improved Best Buy logo? Improved competency.
Yeah. Improved Best Buy store. I do like, you know, we talk about several times how Best Buy, they figured out to open the store up and give you natural light. I really like that. But at the same time, you've got like the Geek Squad, and it's like, ooh.
I've noticed that lately, the last couple of years, I think Best Buy has been more conservative with the products that they're willing to carry in the store.
Yeah, for sure.
They're like, oh, we don't want to carry that product because maybe no one will buy it. But they're carrying a lot of dumb stuff that nobody should be buying.
And getting rid of the CDs.
Yeah.
You got to think, a lot of their product, like back in the day when we were young men, you might go to Best Buy for like a video game or something.
No.
And that's no way. You're going to buy it from Steam. You're not going to go for music. You're not going to go for movies anymore. And their laptops and that kind of thing, you're going to get all the crapware and stuff. And it's like, probably not. Probably not going to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I will mention the Lenovo Yoga laptop that I reviewed and bought and returned, that came from Best Buy. And so it was like, okay, I don't know what kind of thing, and I tried it, and it's like, honestly, it was a fine laptop, but the built-in Wi-Fi was just terrible, and it didn't sit right with me that I had to replace the Wi-Fi to have a reasonable Wi-Fi experience for a brand new laptop. So it was like, all right, let's return that.
Well, maybe that's a vote, like the one vote in their direction is easier to return things.
Yeah, it probably would have been a huge PITA to return it on like Amazon or something. I guess that's true. Mm. We'll see. I've got an alternative laptop on the way. We'll see how that goes.
But I guess maybe car audio. You still go there for that. Mm. They sell appliances, don't they?
Yeah, appliances.
You could go to Lowe's for that, though. I don't know. But they got a new logo, and you can look at it, and we don't know. It's better.
They've got to figure out how to improve selling products, because I feel like that there are enough people that are about the whole, like, look at the Magnolia like home theater thing, and I feel like most people are not going to bother with the Magnolia home theater thing at this point. They've got the in-home advisor, they'll send somebody to your house to like help you buy stuff, but I feel like they don't have enough of like the ecosystem.
Do you trust the in-home? That's just a glorified Geek Squad though, right?
Yeah.
You know, I have a relative who works in the loss prevention at Best Buy. You know who likes Best Buy? Shoplifters.
And with that, that's the perfect lead-in for nonsense, but it's not Friday yet. You're going to have to hang in there for just a little bit longer. We'll see you Friday.
We got several categories coming on Friday because we had big ones this week. So
there's a lot of nonsense this week.
It's going to be a variety on Friday.
See ya.